Good to go? Okay. Glad to have everyone here this morning. We're continuing our study in the book of Proverbs. We'll be picking up again as a topical study. And I apologize if I spend my time adjusting my glasses this morning. They're a new pair. They don't fit my head just right yet. So as we begin our study, we've covered a number of topics. Can you turn me down just a tad? Okay. What topics have we touched on so far that you can remember? We've talked about it. We opened the study. The easy one is the theme of the book is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And we've talked about a wide array of topics. And Brother Kraft made the point the other day as we were talking after one of the classes that the whole first six chapters, he's addressing this to my son. You could do an entire study on the topics that are addressed to my son. Solomon is making the point, he's trying to emphasize practical lessons that apply directly to individuals. Younger people, and in his case, not necessarily just younger people, but people that he can impart that wisdom and knowledge to. So today's a very practical lesson. Our topic today, and we're going to address it more from an attitudinal standpoint as opposed to practical applications, but our study, today, the topic is how to handle money. And the book of Proverbs addresses this over and over and over again. And why then would we choose it as a topic? Well, he addresses it so many times. And he doesn't address it from the standpoint, well, you need to go out here and invest in this component, or you need to go buy these vineyards and in this region because it's better in this region than it is in another. He addresses it from how do you view money and how do you let it control your life? And there's practical applications about the motivators behind the getting of wealth or other gains of a certain type that drive an individual's attitude, and he focuses on those particular cases. Money is a tool. It is an inert. It is inert, being neither good nor evil. If I give you a dollar bill, can it do anything on its own? If I give you a $100 bill, can it do anything on its own? It doesn't have legs. It can't walk around. It can't do anything to tell you what to do. But if I were to lay a prize up here that was of some significant value that was awarded at the end of class, might it influence how we thought about that prize during class? It depends on the person's attitude. It's still an inert thing, but how we view it might change in the potential that a person viewing it as being able to gain it in some way. So when we look toward, it's our attitude toward its acquisition, it's in use that generates the issues surrounding it. And 1 Timothy 6:9-10, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. And he makes the point, it's the love of money, it's how you're viewing the money, it's how you're addressing it that is the root of all evil, not the money itself. And Solomon does that over and over in his emphasis on the different passages. It says, it is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Other translations, many sorrows. Whether it be money or whether it be some other thing that we're obsessed with, whether it be the gaining of money or some other thing that we lose sight of what our ultimate goals are, they can have the same impact on our lives. So how to handle money is emphasized in this passage, continued here in 1 Timothy 6:17-19. As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, ready to share, thus strong, storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. Okay, in this passage, he makes the point here that, again, an individual that's rich in this present age charged him not to be haughty. Okay, so a side effect of potentially being wealthy could be haughtiness. Have we talked about haughtiness in previous lessons in the book of Proverbs? Pride is a sin in and of itself. So he's linking the two together. It's not that a rich man has to be haughty, but has a greater tendency to do so. The next phrase in this particular passage, as it views wealth and so on, has to do our reliance upon wealth and how we view it. Do we rely upon it for our safety net, or do we rely upon God? There's a difference there. The difference being is I'm relying on self and the things that I am able to accomplish versus what God has. Were the Israelites able to capture the land of Canaan on their own? Who did they have to rely upon? God made that evident to them over and over again. When the spies came back and said to them that we can't take the land, and then God said, well, because of this, you're going to wander in the wilderness, what did they decide to take upon themselves? They thought they were going to go in and try and take the land. What happened to them? They were sorely defeated because God was not there supporting them. We don't necessarily think about that day to day in our lives and bring it to the forefront. Well, you know, as we're sitting here earning a living from paycheck to paycheck, we're relying upon that paycheck to come in to feed our families. But ultimately, where does that come from? God. So the emphasis and the attitude here, as we talk through this study, is going to be focused on an attitude of looking at our needs versus our wants. So it talks about in Proverbs, how can one avoid poverty? And the first application of avoiding poverty is through diligence and thrift. Now, here's an application. It's not telling you to go out and do certain things, but it says you do need to be diligent, and you need to be smart about how you go about acquiring your gains. And I apologize on the size of this one. Proverbs 10, 4 through 5, the hand of the diligent man maketh rich. He that gathereth in summer is a wise man. We've already talked about slothfulness and by comparison. And slothfulness, the sluggard was so lazy that he couldn't raise his hand to feed himself. He also wouldn't go out and harvest so that he would have something in the future to do. The diligent man is going to stay at the tasks that are required to be able to support his family. Proverbs 13 and 11, he that gathereth by labor shall increase. Now that's an interesting passage, and I like the wording on that. He that gathereth by labor. The wise man Solomon makes the point about working for what you get. There's value in that. So we could make a comparison. Is this an appropriate way to go about gathering gain in investing in the lottery? What does he say to do here? Labor. He didn't say to go buy your lottery tickets on the weekend. Live within our means as a way to avoid poverty. Assess your needs more highly than your wants. Proverbs 27, 13 through 27. Know well the condition of your flocks. Give attention to your herds. For riches do not last forever, and does a crown endure to all generations? Other passages in the Bible talk about, you know, our riches don't go beyond death. You know, ultimately we may gain things, but who ends up with them? Well, we can't carry it with us, whether it be our children or whether it be someone else getting it. And the point he makes here, for riches do not last forever, in the case of a kingdom, does the king stay the king forever? No. He has to pass that torch on after, because you need a leader that's alive, not one that's dead. So the gaining of power through a kingship is not enduring. So the goal of that in and of itself, he makes the point, is not enduring. When the grass is gone and the new growth appears and the vegetation of the mountains is gathered, the lambs will provide their clothing and the goats the price of a field. There will be enough goat's milk for your food, for the food of your household and the maintenance of your girls. In the latter part of this passage, he emphasizes over and over again, there will be enough. He says, the lambs will provide your clothing. Okay, when we think about the bare necessities of life, what do we, it's generally three categories. It's food, clothing, and shelter. And generally, that's the three things that people ask us, what are the three necessities? Here he addresses clothing. In the case of the goats, the price of the field, a way to continue to earn additional living, so to speak. And there was enough goat's milk for your food. So there's the second thing. And the food of your household and the maintenance of your girls. The maintenance of the family and the household, so to speak, being able to provide shelter. He didn't talk about... all of the things that we might want. And I will say, there's nothing to have, nothing wrong with wants in and of themselves unless they are disproportionate in how we view them in life. If all I was ever interested in was being able to get to the weekend so I could go vacation somewhere for the weekend, and that was my main goal, was to spend my time in pleasure, then I would have my priorities flipped. If I were any other thing for the gains of that, would be the wrong way. But here he's talking about the necessities and going about that, taking about the viewing the fields and taking care of the flock so that, taking care of the flock, why? Because it was going to provide these things. This goes back to the idea of being diligent in one's attitude about how they earn their living. How can avoid... living within our means continued, live with what you need rather than being controlled by our greed. Proverbs 12 and 11. Whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits lacks sense. Here again, he's making the point by comparison. Working for the living as opposed to pursuing worthless opportunities. Do not procrastinate. Another way of avoiding poverty. Proverbs 12 and 27. Proverbs 12 and 27. Whoever is slothful will not roast his game, but the diligent man will get precious wealth. Proverbs 13 and 4. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. Proverbs 21 and 5. The plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty. And then Proverbs 24, 30 through 34, do not sleep during harvest. All of these, as it relates to procrastination and idea, it goes to being focused on doing the right things at the right time to be able to achieve one's goals, not putting off things that are important. If you put off the maintenance on your vehicle too long, what happens? It breaks down. What might have been a $2 hose replacement, nothing ends up being $2 anymore, ends up being a $1,200 repair. In a lot of cases, it's $1,200 repair because you don't know how to fix it yourself anymore. But procrastination. Or, I got a little drip at the kitchen sink faucet, and it tends to run back down the spout and runs underneath the back edge of it and drips into the cabinet. And I let that go on and on for years. What does it end up doing to that cabinet? It rots it away and rots the floor out from under it, and you end up having to rip the kitchen cabinets out and do the whole thing over again. You know, out of sight, out of mind is real easy sometimes. You know, I don't see that drip. It kind of gets out of my sight. I'm not thinking about it unless I get back there and find the soggy soap that's up underneath the sink. But because I put off something that was actually important to deal with, I now pay the price and penalty longer. We can see that even in relationships. We've talked about crucial conversations between individuals. When we know that when we see a conversation turn, or we see a Christian who is struggling and we put off talking to them, how much value is lost in putting off that time and that action? It's immeasurable because it's a soul that's at risk. So this is very important. Do not procrastinate, whether it be related to poverty here, whether it be related to an individual soul, all of those fit into that same category. And he makes the point over and over again here, certain categories of people will be more likely to do this. And he makes the point about the sluggard and the slothful and one who's just going to put off things. Any comments up through this point? Other ways to avoid poverty. Changing the tone of this, it's a good advice about wealth or money's acquisition. And the writer here makes the point about businesses and how we're to conduct ourselves in business and how we're to behave. Be honest in business. I apologize, it's jumping around where I did my animation, so you can get to see the whole thing at once. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord. So if I'm cheating someone to get my gain, it's not acceptable. It's no different than lying. It's stealing in and of itself. It's sinful. Proverbs 16:11, a just balance and scales are the Lord's. All the weights in the bag are his work. The Lord expects one to measure things justly and to be fair in how they conduct their business. Proverbs 20:10, unequal weights and unequal measures are both like an abomination to the Lord. He makes these points over and over again. This is four different passages here that relate to this. The getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a snare of death. There's four separate passages in a book of 30 chapters, or 31 chapters, that relate to cheating and stealing someone in business. Now, it may seem advantageous if we're an untrustworthy person and that's the way we want to go about it. It'll be a short-term gain. But ultimately, conducting business in that way catches up to one based on reputation. If you consistently deliver less than you're promising, people don't come back. May last for 6 months, may last for a year, may last for 5 years, but after that, word gets out. And you don't end up conducting business very much longer. Do not take advantage of the poor here, as he's making a point about the gathering of gain. In Proverbs 22:16, whoever oppresses the poor to increase his own wealth or gives to the rich will only come to poverty. Now, we mentioned this same passage previously in another study. The two points that we want to make here in this particular verse is, you're oppressing the poor to get something for yourself. So you're taking advantage of another person. And then the other point that we made in a previous study was that we're giving someone money to gain influence. The latter part of that being particular, he gives to the rich. Why would you give to the rich to buy influence? I was reading an article yesterday at Aviation Industry as it relates to the amount of money that the aviation industry, particularly Boeing, uses in lobbying our federal government. Boeing spends $270 million a year in lobbyists to lobby for their benefit in our federal government. Now, they're a multi-billion dollar company, but that's still a significant portion of lobbying money that's used to gain influence and gain one's way. This passage goes contrary to that. It goes to the idea of fair play. In Proverbs 28:6, better is a poor man who walks within his integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways. We've talked about Proverbs the construction of Proverbs in and of themselves, and this is a contrast. Better this than this. And in particular, it says, integrity is more valuable than all the wealth that you can gain by becoming rich. A good name is something that is very hard to acquire. And it can disappear and dissipate in almost an instant if we squander it. Good advice about money's acquisition: do not borrow from one you're not willing to serve. Makes the point in Proverbs 27:7, the rich rules over the poor and the borrower is a slave to the lender. Okay, we all generally have borrowed money at one point or another, oftentimes to finance a home, or, you know, I need to buy a car to be able to get back and forth to work. And, you know, those end up being somewhat necessities. But, you know, when it comes around to that monthly payment, do you feel just kind of tied to it? Well, you are. You're tied to it. It's got to be made, or the other things go away. Now, in the case of, let's say I'm indebted to a loan shark that's charging me 20% interest if I don't pay on a regular basis. That sounds like most credit card companies. The issue there is that, you know, we become a slave to them if we don't make that. And if we miss the things in our obligations to them, it gets further and further behind and more indebted. The early days of the founding of this nation and other nations, the indentured servants, where they would pledge that they would pay X amount or a number of years of service in order to be able to gain passage to the United States. A lot of those people ended up in basically slavery, doing the bidding of their masters for extended periods of time as their masters changed their wages over and over. Wait, we have an example of that in Jacob, do we not? And Laban, where he changed his wages over and over again, and he was indebted to Laban until he could pay off for his wives? Did it create a good working relationship between Jacob and Laban? No, we see the practical application of this particular passage throughout the Bible, throughout practical lives. So it's making the point here in this particular passage: do not borrow from one you're not willing to serve, because it's going to be a tough relationship. An admonition there as it relates to parents and children. Oftentimes parents will finance a home for a child, maybe. That makes for some interesting dynamics in the family. Always be careful as you think through how you want to go about doing that. Avoid being a co-signer for someone. In the material that I was using for preparing this lesson, it grouped these two things together. The previous about do not borrow from one you're not willing to serve and being a co-signer under the same category. I feel like they're two different things, and it's important to note the difference. If I go and co-sign on a loan, am I actually the borrower? No. But am I an obligate? I have a responsibility for it. So if the first person defaults, what happens? I have to pay it. It falls back on me. So in Proverbs 6, 1 and 2, my son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, have given your pledge for a stranger, if you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, then do this, my son, and save yourself. Now this language is pretty dire, is it not? It's saying, talking about saving oneself. Well, I just loaned somebody some money, or I co-signed for something. It's viewing this in a way that it can be very detrimental and making the point, you know, you really need to see the seriousness of this. He continues in the writing there, for you have come into a hand of your neighbor. Go, hasten, and plead urgently with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. All of those in that latter part of that application are all about trying to save oneself. And practical application and a little different twist on this. In the work that I do, it's doing design and product development work for people. And that means if somebody wants to design a brand new clicker, they may come in with an idea and say, I've got the best thing since sliced bread. Will you design it for me, and I'll pay you based upon what profits we make off of it? Well, okay. First off, that sounds cool. If I'm willing to take the risk, I may get paid more after the fact. But the other thing is that in that case, if I don't have any level of ownership in the company, what if they decide to go off and develop it and, you know, they get tired of it? They don't want to market it. They don't want to spend the time going about and trying to sell it. Who's going to be left holding the bag on that one? Well, I've already put in all the work. I'm not getting paid for it because they gave up. That's exactly here. If you go into as a co-signer on a neighbor and they decide, well, I don't want to repay that money, now you're the one holding the bag on it. It can occur in different ways, whether you're a co-signer or not. It's how you view setting up relationships with people that are financial in nature. It makes the point in Proverbs 11 and 15. Excuse me. Whoever puts up security for a stranger will surely suffer harm, but he who hates striking hands in a pledge is secure. He basically makes the point here. It's not a smart idea to be a co-signer on anything. And that it makes the point over and over again. You know, if you're going to co-sign with somebody, that very thing, it falls in this case, you know, they're asking you to co-sign because you have the credit rating to be able to do it. Well, if it falls through, it's back on you. And I would throw this out as an admonition. This was kind of the words of my dad as he passed it down to me. He said, if you're going to loan somebody some money, you might as well just consider it gone. If they pay it back, they pay it back. That's fine. But if they don't, you've just realized that you've just given it to them. So the day that you loan it to them, consider you've given it to them. And that way you won't be, and be prepared for that. If you're not financially able to just give it to them, don't do it. Wealth is a strong city providing protection and the means of acquiring more. Proverbs 10 and 15, a rich man's wealth is his strong city. The poverty of the poor is their ruin. We see that in today's society where, quote, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Here it's talking about in the case of someone that was wealthy, let's say it was a leader or a king, he would build a city, be able to protect his people and be able to conduct trade and be able to exact more gain as a result of that trade. But the poor don't necessarily participate in that unless the king himself is providing benefits for them. In Proverbs 19 and 4, wealth makes many friends, but the poor is separated from his neighbor. Wealth can be a curse, as it's related to what to do with wealth. Proverbs 18 and 23, the poor use entreaties, but the rich answer roughly. We talked about the idea of one being rich and it has a propensity to make them haughty or proud. Do the haughty and proud oftentimes respond gently and kindly? We hear these stories over and over again about, let's say, air travel and, a celebrity not necessarily getting the seat that they wanted, making a stink over it. It goes to this type of passage. They've responded roughly rather than gently. Proverbs 28 and 11. The rich man is wise in his own conceit. Other passages would say wise in his own eyes. It can be a curse in how one individual behaves. Proverbs 16 and 18. Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. That self-reliance upon the wealth, that getting of gain and feeling one is empowered as a result of it, leads one to a fall ultimately. What to do with wealth? Do not be greedy, help the needy. Proverbs 3, 9 through 10. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with his first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats with bursting of wine. Under the Jewish law, what were they to do in order to be able to support the poor when they went to harvest? Or what were they not allowed to do? They couldn't take it all. So in modern language, where the combine turns around and can't get the corners, they had to leave it. Anything that fell in the field, they weren't to just necessarily go back and gather it up so that the poor could come through and glean it. You know, if you pick, they were not to pick everything completely clean. The point making, if you lived by that, you would actually be blessed. God would continue to bless you to where you were doing for taking care of the needy. In Proverbs 19 and 17, whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him with his deed. I struggle with this particular application in a couple of areas. When we drive up at the interstate and there's a panhandler at the interstate, is that person in need or not? How do I discern and judge that? We don't know. And that's, each time I think about that, I think about a passage like this. By contrast, if I have a fellow brother in need and their washing machine's died and they're struggling as a family, can I help them with that washing machine? Absolutely. And that's an application of this type of thing. Our fellow brethren that are in Zimbabwe that we continue to help, an application of this type of thing where we know there is a known need and being able to help support it. It goes to the idea here in the last part of this, if we say God will repay him for his deed, what does it say? Lays up for himself treasures in heaven in another passage. Proverbs 14 and 31, whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him. Do we want to offer an insult to God? That's kind of really pointed here. If not abiding by this and helping those that are needy, you know, we're insulting our maker. Jesus made the point in his teaching about the little ones. Whosoever has done for these little ones has done so for me. The covetous person will be despised and made poor. So as we're looking at what to do with wealth, we're not to be covetous. Proverbs 11, 26 through 28. The people curse him who holds back gain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. Whoever diligently seeks good, seeks favor, but evil comes to him who searches for it. Whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish with a great leaf, like a green leaf, excuse me. People curse him who holds back. When we look at a king, that's an autocrat or a leader over a nation. We have different examples of that through literature. You know, the story of Robin Hood, the sheriff of Nottingham and stealing from the poor and building it up to have his own kingdom, so to speak. Robin Hood then turns around and steals from the sheriff in order to give back to the poor. Well, two wrongs don't make a right. What Robin Hood was doing wasn't right either, but the sheriff was certainly in the wrong to begin with. But he was oppressing the poor throughout. There was nothing about... It's somewhat the same thing. The idea of what giving back to the government, what they duly, Jesus addressed it when they asked him, should we pay taxes to Caesar? And he made the point in that particular case of looking at the coin and whose inscription was on it. And they said Caesar's. And what did Jesus say? Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. That's the separation there. And in the case where we're being taxed, we should be applying the rules that are given fairly and paying our just due. In this particular case, as it makes, the blessings on people curse him who holds back gain. You know, a person who has the ability to help someone and just sits there and gathers it all to themselves over and over again and never gives back isn't looked upon favorably. You know, whether it be by his employees, he just bought the new car and yet his employees can't buy their own food. In the case of a company that where there's total disproportions between the compensation of senior leadership and the people that are actually doing the work, they generally don't look favorably upon the leaders of that company. And there's a lot of those in this nation, particularly in the financial sector. What to do with wealth? Covetous person will be despised and made poor. In Proverbs 3, 17 through 18, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come again, tomorrow I will give it when you have it with you. If you owe somebody something, don't put it, and they ask you for it back, go ahead and take care of it. Don't put it off and push it off. Riches will not profit at death. Seek foremost eternal wealth. Proverbs 11 and 4, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Proverbs 13, 21 and 22, disaster pursues sinners, but the righteous are rewarded with good. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. Can't take it through death with you. Proverbs 23, 4 through 5. Do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it is gone. For suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward the heaven. It is not to be your focus because it is only a fleeting thing. Goes back to the idea of laying up for ourselves treasures in heaven. Proverbs 27 and 14. For the riches are not forever, nor does the crown endure to every generation. A good man's name is rather to be chosen as it relates to this. In Proverbs 15 and 16, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it. And I'm rushing through these because I want to get to my conclusion point. Proverbs 16 and 18, better is little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. We've had a similar passage even earlier that's sort of worded in the same way. Proverbs 22, 1 through 2, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. True wealth is found in God's wisdom. Blessed is one who holds wisdom and one who gets understanding. True wealth is found in God's wisdom. Riches and honor are with me. Enduring wealth and righteousness, my fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, yea, than yield much fine silver. Over and over throughout this, it's showing the comparison that, you know, God's wisdom is more valuable than physical wealth in any way. As we step through this, by humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. By wisdom, a house is built, and by understanding, it is established. Conclusion. Proverbs 37 through 9. Two things I ask of you, deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. The simple prayer here is to give me the things that I need to be able to do what I should, and to be satisfied with those things for the furtherance of God. So over and over here, the conclusion of this is, give me what I need, not what I want, and help me to be satisfied with what I have. Thank you for your attention.